for the players.
I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Cooper.
And this is For The Players, the pop culturist PlayStation podcast. Over 40 years of playing PlayStation and 10 plus years in that game's been combined. I'd like to thank you for joining us in this PlayStation conversation.
This PlayStation conversation happens every Monday morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you'd like to take part in future conversations with us, you can check out our socials, Facebook, Discord, Instagram, and X. All of those links can be found in the description below.
If you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/popculturist. We can watch and record this show live, or you can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation pod. If you're listening to us on podcast services, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. If you watch us on YouTube, be sure to like, scroll the comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. And if you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/popculturist, as well as our merchandise store, popculturist.com/shop, where you can buy shirts or other assorted shit with our logos on it. Alrighty, Max. Excuse me. We are recording. We were supposed to be done for the year, but we got a little too keen in the Game Awards. And then we're like, shit, we haven't done our Game Awards yet. So we're doing a pickup episode that you guys are getting lovely on the day before Christmas Eve, the Christmas Eve Eve. So Merry Christmas to you all, preemptively. Let's just get into it.
Let's start.
Do we push for time? Max, did you by any chance count how many games you played this year?
Yeah, so my list is horrendously outdated. So I think my... Oh, you know what? If I look at my PlayStation Wrapped, it tells me how many games I played this year.
Ooh. Yeah, that's right. You could, yeah, because you'd have to look at yours and the Pop's account, and you'd be mashing them together. Well, yeah. I had to go manual with them written on a bit of paper. So because I share my
some of them are PC. But yeah, go. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, that's right. So I went with as many as I could remember. So I have played a couple more since, but I'm looking at around 45 to 50 games this year. New games. Some of them have not this year, which is a part of our category, but most of them are new games, varying over different platforms. I stepped into a lot of PC this year, which is lovely now that I've got a better computer.
I'm at like 90.
Holy shit, how is that even possible?
I'm at 68 games played on my console and 22 games played on the Pop C account. So, plus the PC games, I'm looking at, yeah, but running close to 100.
Holy shit. Actually, let me check my rep numbers again, because I may have greatly miscalculated. Okay, so how?
Now, granted, some of those are me, like, downloading a game, trying it for 20 minutes. I'm like, this is not for me.
Oh, okay.
Like, probably new games that I've played this year, I would be probably sitting close to, like, 60-ish.
Actually, that makes sense. I may have greatly miscalculated, because... my PS, according to my Wrapped, I played 106 games on PS5 alone, and I don't share my PS5 with my son, which means this list is fucked. Immediately, this is wrong.
But yeah, like I said, some of those games is me going, "Ooh, what are the PlayStation Plus extra games this month? No, this one's not for me."
So yeah, actually, the list itself. That I've got here are games that I spent a good amount of time with, or at least
on my list that I was physically writing down as I was playing the game, stopped at NBA 2K25, which was like, I want to say like June or July.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Apparently I haven't updated my list since then, so it's a bit of a hot mess. Mm. But I would say it's about 60-ish games, maybe 70.
Well, look, let's keep that in mind, because as you mentioned, we're playing some games that came out this year, some games, and a lot of games that did come out this year. So let's kick things off with one of the categories that we like to do with our Game of the Year awards. So we have essentially four categories, five if you count honorable mentions. So we have our Game of the Year, Best Independent, Best of Not This Year, and then most Disappointing. So with that in mind, let's kick in with our best of not this year. We'll do a one backwards and forwards, and we'll do. Mm-hmm. I've only got two, but you've got three.
I've got three. So I'll go first then.
Yeah.
So in my third spot is Fable.
Oh, the OG Fable.
OG Fable. So after seeing the trailer for what is it, Playground Games? It's Playground, right? I'm not going crazy.
That is Playground.
With their new trailer for Fable, I'm like, oh, I would like to play the old one again. So I happened to own it on Steam, played it on PC.
And, I have it on Steam.
Because I got the anniversary edition that comes with all the DLC and fun stuff. So I played that. It's still a solid game. It doesn't look great anymore. It has not aged well. But that is a... due to the cel-shaded nature of that game, it doesn't, you know... But still fun.
I guess it's the challenge of timely art direction is that it can either age really well or it can age badly really quick.
Yeah.
Go either way. I didn't have a number three, so I will go with... Do you want to go to your number two?
No, you can do your number two, cool. And then I'll do my number two, and then...
Yeah, so my number two was Mafia 3. So this is from 2K and Hangar 13. after the announcement of Mafia, the old country, which is the new one that's coming out in ideally next year, I was like, we played 1 and 2, we reviewed them back in the day, really, really loved them. But 3 was one of those games that I always started, and then I sort of wandered off. And you'll never guess what happened this time. I played it and sort of wandered off. But it is still on the list because what I have played longer this time more than I ever had, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. It came at me just at the right time where I was down for like an open world sort of experience that wasn't too demanding or too heavy. I just wanted something that I could just go to destination and shoot a bunch of things and then scoot. Like, it's very old school sandbox action adventure, third person old GTA clone-ish sort of energy.
You wanted period honest car chases at 20 miles per hour.
Yeah, I wanted to like feel like I was in New Orleans in the 60s with just rampant racism and people getting shot. It was awesome. Thoroughly enjoyed that one. What's your number two?
Returnal.
How'd you go back?
I always go back. It's still installed on my PC. We technically got a PC code for it this year, I think. So I go back from time to time because it's one of those games where I can just duck in, duck out, 20 minutes quick. Well, sometimes my runs don't last 20 minutes. Depends on how I go. But the game is so good. It really is. It's such a fantastic shooter. I love the roguelike mechanics of it. It's just fun, and I really hope that Housemarque do something similar in their next game.
Well, because Returnal is always on my list of like, oh, maybe I should go back. And a lot of that's because as I've now become more understanding and more adaptable when it comes to like roguelike games. Like, my skill set's still garbage. I reckon I'd still crap out at like Biome 3. But I do, now that I understand it better, I think I might have a better run.
With your newfound mouse and keyboard skills on Call of Duty, I wonder how you would go on the PC version.
That's a very good point.
Using a mouse and keyboard as opposed to using a controller.
Mm. I've been having a better time at Call of Duty with mouse and keyboards. That's a very good point.
Maybe with a little bit more accuracy, you'll possibly die less.
Yeah, it's very... Ooh, I might have to think about that. I have to look into that. All right, so my number one of games of not this year was Twin Breaker, a Sacred Symbols adventure. So I had just recently reviewed Tribreaker, which will no doubt make our best indie list, or my indie list. In order to prepare myself for that, I was like, I'm going to play the original Twin Breaker. So it is a brick breaker, but it's made and it's involving Colin Moriarty and Chris Reagan of Colin's Last Stand and Sacred Symbols, which is a podcast I listen to every week that I adore, that is a huge inspiration to me. So checked it out, and what I loved about it was multiplayer, right? So my partner and I, Phoebe and I, could sit down and we could play together, and she would control one or two paddles depending on the level. I would control another two, and it made it really fun. It was a fun kind of thing that we could play together where it wasn't too overly complicated or large, like massively mechanically driven, that would impact her not being a deeper console or gamer in general. There's a whole lot of bias in this, obviously, because I love Sacred Symbols. I enjoyed the game. I enjoyed all the references. I enjoyed playing with my partner. Game was fantastic. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Okay, my number one's biased as well.
Oh, yeah?
My number one's Baldur's Gate 3.
Oh, that's a good
point. Which was my game of the year last year, I'm pretty sure. So, with the nature of Baldur's Gate 3, they do updates constantly. So one of the big updates for this year was they added a bunch of new stuff. So I kind of went back in, checked it out, played through it again, and the game's still solid. They've got another big update coming next year with the likes of, they're adding crossplay, which is awesome. They're adding a new subclass for every single class in the game. So yeah, maybe I can jump in your world. Mate, roll a new character, jump in with you and Craig.
That's true. We have been meaning to go back. That's another one that I've been actively contemplating.
Crossplay is always good. But yeah, Baldur's Gate 3.
Well, there you go. Well, congratulations to Twinbreaker and Baldur's Gate 3 for winning Best of Not this year from a podcast that no one will probably listen to. Neither will they, so that's fine. Look, that was a nice moment. Let's get into most disappointing games of the year. Now, you've picked three.
Yeah, so I went for a little different. I'm walking the line of biggest disappointment, not necessarily in the game itself being disappointing and bad, but it as an experience being disappointed with that.
That's fine by me.
You'll know what I mean when I start explaining it.
Yeah. All right. So so I've got five, so I'll do two runners up.
All right.
I'll go through some honorable mentions.
Go for it.
It wouldn't be a PlayStation show if we didn't highlight Concord. I think that was a big disappointment of the year. It's an easy one. I know that's kind of a shoot, hence why it's not making my numbered list. It's just more of, it's totally fair that it should be considered as that. We both played it in the beta. We both played it at launch. and it wasn't good. And it really felt like it should have been. The other one was LEGO Horizon Adventures. Now, this isn't disappointing in like the full grand scheme of the game, because I quite liked what it was. It was aggressively fine. But upon reflection and thinking about it more, that game is barely a LEGO game. It is missing so much of what makes LEGO games brilliant. It felt like the most surface level handling of Horizon and bring it into that LEGO world. And it feels more of like a shameless direct tie-in to like the, you know, the Tall Neck and the upcoming Shell Walker pack, more than the whole Funko Fusion game, which I haven't played. But the reason I haven't touched it is I'm like, that looks like shameless promotion for something I don't care about. And like, they tricked me because I care about Horizon, but then they delivered a quite subpar experience in that. Yeah, it was just missing. There's only like four characters. There's not much at all. It was a lot more shallower than I had originally hoped and anticipated. So that does bring us to my number three, which in this case, actually, all of these could equally be at any point in the top three for different reasons.
Yeah, same with mine.
So I'm just going to, these aren't in order. These are just, you all kind of sucked. Star Wars Outlaws. Now, if any of these made your list, feel free to jump in.
No, I don't think any of the ones that are on my list will be on your list, because they're all on my list for a very specific reason.
Oh, this is exciting then.
Yeah.
Mine was Star Wars Outlaws, right? So back in the day when they're like, hey, we're going to make a Star Wars game, no lightsabers, no force, just scoundrels. Like, sick.
And they instantly lost Max when they said no force powers.
And I was like, that's cool. Like, because I personally am excited for Star Wars stories that take place outside of the Skywalkers. Because Skywalkers are boring, right? And that we've seen them. How is everything so incestuous? It's crazy. Playing this game, I was like, fuck, wish it was about the Skywalkers. Because the main character, whose name I can't remember, Jyn Erso, no, something else, was kind of us. Like, I found them very irredeemable, very incompetent, and they seemed to just frustrate everyone in existence. So I found it very difficult to connect with them as a character.
It was K-Vess.
K-Vess, thank you. And I just couldn't care. And then in turn, all the forced stealth at the beginning, which turns out to be an extended tutorial, really, was us.
Which is now fixed, to be fair. So as long as you didn't play it at launch. As long as you didn't play it at launch, but you will never.
Yeah, then that's I'm sorry, that's still an issue, because it's the experience that we played at launch.
Oh yeah, for sure.
That was butts. Speeder bike was cool. Handled like gastro, it was all over the place, but it was pretty cool. Like, it was okay. What about yourself? What's your first major disappointment?
My first disappointment is a game that didn't even come out this year.
That's cheating, but I like it.
Hollow Knight Silk Song.
Okay.
Was supposed to come out this year, and it didn't. It ruined my list and cost me the win. That's my biggest.
Actually, sure, it would have got you the win had it come out. I reckon. That's fair.
Yeah.
It's the game that is forever not coming out.
Yeah, it's the new Duke Nukem. I hope not.
Oh, I hope not.
I'll jump in and do my second. My second biggest disappointment is not the fact that it's a bad game. My disappointment is the fact that it's a game that released so early in a year that released so many bangers, and that's Prince of Persia.
You put that in your, like, disappointing?
I put it in my disappointing, not because it's a bad game.
The game was great.
It is great. I'm disappointed that no one probably played it because it happened or remembers it in this time because it came out in January.
And then the entire team got laid off.
And everything else happened this year. And it's just, it got lost. That is disappointing.
It's crazy to me because like when we had our first...
The game was so good.
Like, that was one of our first big reviews. Remember, like, for this year. And you were like, this is a game of the year. It has to be a game of the year contender.
Yeah. And then everything else came out and it got lost. Which is a real disappointment.
Well, one that I knew... Because your previous pick was about your list, right? Yeah, our Metacritic fun thing we do. My second is a game that boned me last year, and then it released this year, it boned me again. And that was Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League.
Yeah.
I wanted to love this game. I wanted to like this game. I love Rocksteady and how Rocksteady handled the Batman series with the Arkham Asylum. I literally bought Arkham, the Return to Arkham pack this week, and I'm currently playing Arkham Asylum again. Like, that's where I'm at, because I love this game so much. But Suicide Squad was butts. Map movement was interesting and fine. Everything was a sponge. The characters are pretty unlikable. Like I said, I don't have any issue with like them killing the Justice League because spoilers, it was in the name of the fucking game. And then like all the quote unquote DEI stuff, don't care, right? It didn't change the game for me. Like, had they taken all that crap out, it wouldn't have, it wouldn't have mattered. Like, is there rainbow flags in there? Yeah, awesome, cool, fine, great, awesome, doesn't hurt. It's a bad game. But your number one, Max? Actually, what did you? Because you played some Suicide Squad. Did you have any thoughts on that one?
I barely played it. I actually didn't play it outside of the early access beta thing. I didn't play it on launch. I wasn't won over. During that, like, I'm in the DC Marvel wars. I'm definitely not Team DC. And these characters didn't really do much for me. I had fun for the like half an hour I played of the early access beta type thing. I thought it could work, and then it kind of did exactly what, you know, the Avengers game did, and it wasn't great. They it was very poorly handled, and it is a shame because they needed a win.
Speaking of like, I'll jump in with my number one, and then because I feel like yours is gonna be entertaining. Likely the most disappointing thing I've experienced this year was earlier in this year when they released this free little demo called Silent Hill, The Short Message. This was supposed to be the indicator of what was going to happen with Silent Hill. Now, at this point, we knew Silent Hill 2 was coming, and we had already sort of seen stuff and went, this looks questionable. Then I played this, and I was like, what the fuck is this? It was bad. For a game that was like, you know, tackling mental health, and apparently mental health was the reason and for all the things and the suicides and stabbing. Nah, wasn't good. I could even finish it and I was fucking free. But thankfully, it wasn't a sign of things to come, and Silent Hill 2 came out and it was good. So that was a win. But yeah, fuck that game. Congratulations, you're my worst game of the year. What's yours?
My biggest disappointment this year was 30th anniversary consoles being locked behind tier 5.
well, actually, they re-released some today, and it went and I sold out about 24 seconds.
Yeah,
and they lowered it to level 4 as well.
I'm like, oh, really? I didn't know that. So it's funny that you talked about Silent Hill, because Silent Hill 2 is my biggest disappointment this year.
Boom! Really?
Oh, man. So I really wanted to love this game. Everyone I know who loves this game talks about it with such affection and such nostalgia. And they had me kind of really hyped for this game. And then I played it, because I had never played it to be like, because, you know, I missed that portion. I was a Resident Evil guy growing up. And it just didn't click with me. And I'm like, I don't get it. What does everyone see in this game? Like, it kind of handled like garbage. The lighting sucked. The gameplay was...
Did you make the original or the remaster? The remaster.
Oh, I've never played the original, so I'm talking about...
Oh my god, you said the lighting was very, very dark. Sure.
Okay. Like,
I was like, what fucking game did you play?
I don't get it. And like, that's me. Like, that's fine. And think games don't have to be for everyone, but I was a little bit disappointed. I expected more from how everyone spoke so lovingly about this game. I was like, I don't see it.
Mm.
And I don't see it because the lighting sucked.
Good answer. Well, there you go.
That was my, like, it's not a bad game. I just didn't feel it. Like, it's just...
Well, that's what disappointing is. Like, it's not about being a bad game. It's about being not what we thought it was. Or
pretty much. So I thought it was amusing that you spoke about Silent Hill as well. I'm like, ooh. It's
different Silent Hill, because Silent Hill 2 made a different one on my list, just saying. Not that one. So congratulations to Silent Hill 2 and Silent Hill The Short Message for somehow being disappointing. The second one makes sense. First one, questionable. All right. Let's get into the best indies.
I'm assuming we both have the same one.
Well, I've got five. How many did you pick for indies?
Three.
All right, cool.
Darling, I cannot help you play at the moment, sweetheart.
So in that case, I will I'll give some honorable mentions. So an honorable mention to Go-Go Town, which is a game that I played at PAX, and that was awesome. It was a little town builder, quite cute, little chibi art. It was adorable. Thoroughly enjoyed that game a lot. It was really sweet, and I had a blast. My other honorable mention goes to The Plucky Squire. Really loved it, really enjoyed it. Great game. Once again, another Aussie game. Played with my son, which gave it a whole extra level of fun for me. I really loved its art style and how it chose to, you know, change its like depth of field in terms of how the book orientates, then your ability to go from 2D to 3D when you leave the book. Awesome. Loved it. But here are my three. Coming in at number three was Tribreaker. A Sacred Symbols Odyssey. Really loved it. It's a sequel to the Twin Breaker, which I mentioned earlier, except this time single player only. Did lose some points for that, but what it chose to do and how it handled the adapting and evolving a brick breaking game, like it allowed you to control the ball with like a little fuel system. It then throughout the 40 levels, it would change genres, and suddenly it became Frogger, and then Pac-Man, and then Asteroids, and then like an old school Atari, like, you know, shooter, like very similar to the speeder sections of like Super Star Wars. And that's a great story, because I obviously enjoyed it. Sacred Symbols, big fan. They've brought in Dustin, so it's a full Sacred Symbols set. Big fan of that. But yes, that's my number three. So what's your number three?
Plucky Squire.
Hey, there you go.
So spoilers, I didn't play many indies this year. So Plucky Squire was cool. I didn't finish it. I kind of fell out of interest around the midpoint. Going from the 2D to 3D, like you mentioned, was kind of cool. But it was a mechanic that I got over very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it didn't quite keep me enthralled.
Mm.
It was kind of... After the first few times, it kind of just felt gimmicky.
Yeah.
And then it became very tedious with the pick up the word and change the words in the...
Yeah, they didn't quite expand on... combat as well was kind of shallow. I enjoyed it. It was quite simple, so it was great for my son to sort of pick up and play. But you did get a point where we as adult gamers, it kind of like, where's the next thing? Like, where's the little thing to expand on it? So I get that. My number two... was Trading Card Game Shop Simulator. That game is awesome. I literally played it today. the idea of being able to not just run a sim. Like, so everyone knows I love my sim games, right? So I could make a game that's about me simulating running a trading card shop. Love it. Great idea. I can then open those packets and like build a collection and then sell those cards, like sell the extras. Double brilliant. Let's go. Like you're ticking multiple boxes here of what I love in a sim and what I would love in a sim game. And then of course you get to like, you know, spray stinky people. Big fan of that. Yeah, number two.
Number two is Power World for me.
You did enjoy that earlier in the year. You had a blast.
We, as a friend group, we paid for a private server. We were playing it. We played it solidly for a couple of months. The game was interesting. It's everything that you kind of wanted from a 3D open world Pokemon game that just wasn't Pokemon. Mm. You know, normally I'm not a huge fan of survival games, but the survival mechanics in this were tedious. It just kind of had a hot and cold mechanic. It's not like you needed to eat or hydrate or do any of those other things that the more hardcore survival games do. And it was fun just, you know, living in a world where I could not only, you know, fight people with my pals, but I could shoot them too.
And number one, I assume we both have the same.
Yes.
What'd you pick?
Bellatro.
Oh, good. So did I. I was really worried for a second there. Absolutely. Bellatro is the best independent game of this year. I'm very glad that today, time of recording, I did finally achieve my first ever win. I ran through the eight antis. Thank you. Well, technically it was 9 antis because I picked the voucher that sends you back but gives you an extra hand because I thought I was going to need it. And then, so yeah, technically it was 9.
The planet cards aligned?
The planet cards did align. Was one of those things where I just happened to find good jokers that kind of worked with each other, which was, there was one that was for every time you play a hand, you get +1 multiplier. For every time you discard, you get a negative. And then I happened to get another card that goes, we'll give you 3 extra hands per turn, but you can't discard anything. I'm like, sick. Brilliant. Let's go. So like I'm getting my multipliers just stacking at every hand because I'm not discarding anyway. And then I ended up getting one for a flush. And then I started to actually like, you know, make it more polychrome and holographic or whatever, which would then give me multipliers just by doing things. And then, eventually made them essentially my entire deck clubs. So I was able to sort of, just run off flushes and straights. And then I got reamed at like ante 11. Where it was like, in one hand, I need to do like 1.2 million. I was like, that's not fucking possible. So I died. But for a game that has consumed me, and like so much it's consumed my friend group, in that myself, my partner Phoebe, my housemate Ange, and my mate Craig, like we would all sit in my lounge room and we would just, someone would go first, we would play until they die, and we'd all help each other and make sure we'd like do all the math, and we go, cool, and then we hand it around and we'll just keep going. And that was, it's awesome. I thought it would kind of break my brain with all the different like little twists and variables, and it does, but it delivers it in such a very simple way, because once you become further accustomed with poker hands, like, because if you don't know the top of your head, like it's a hurdle, but once you're in and you remember that, you can then focus on what the jokers do and what the multipliers do and all the different buffs, and then suddenly becomes a whole new game. And I think for me, my secret of being able to do it today was because I did it during my Ritalin window. You need like good comprehension, which I don't normally have. But yourself, why is Bellatro
one? Kind of everything you already said. It's one of those, it's such a simplistic idea, but it ramps it up to 11. Mm. Like it's in theory, on paper, it's simple, but in practice, not so much. And it kind of really makes you think about how you're going to progress and you treat it as such. So it's like, you know, if I pick up this, it kind of ruins the strategy that I have been doing. This isn't working with what I've already got in my deck. This card's not going to work because I don't gel properly. And you kind of take that risk reward of, you know, skipping the antis for the bonus, the little bonus tags or the free shops or the free cards. And then it's so in depth. It's insane.
No, I completely agree. It's brilliant. And then now they've got Cult of the Lamb and Witcher tie-ins. I'm like, shit, this game has got cooler. And also, it's the game I probably played the most on my portal, because it's like, you know, it's not like
perfect for it. It seems
brilliant for Portal. All right, congratulations, best indie, Bellatro. So let's get into. So as before, we head into the game of our Game of the Year awards. We've each picked five nominees. Did you have any honorable mentions?
I don't think so. No. All right. Not this year.
Well, I've got a couple, so I'm going to rip through them. Call of Duty Black Ops 6. Didn't expect you to make my list at all. However, you're the game that I spend most mornings playing before work and most of my lunch breaks playing. So shout out to you. Campaign's really cool. Haven't finished it because I kind of fell into the hole of multiplayer and I haven't put it down. Loving that. Shout out to Call of Duty Black Ops. Crow Country. It's a game we played earlier in the year. It's a good throwback to old PS1 sort of adventure games. Stylistically, it's very similar to Final Fantasy VII, but it's got a lot of that Silent Hill, Resident Evil, almost Metroidvania-esque backtracking, and it's set in this really cool kind of like spooky world, and it's fun. It was a good throwback game. Loved it. So that would also have been in my indie list had I had, you know, more than three. Helldivers 2. Now, it didn't make my top list because I did fall off it. However, the time that I did play it, thoroughly enjoyed it. Really, really enjoyed it. Playing with friends, doing it solo, you know, just testing it out, or even jumping in that time I did with you, Max, where you and your mates just carried me entirely. We essentially went to one of the automaton levels, and you said, sit on this tower and don't move. I'm like, okay. And I just watched fucking chaos ensue. It was awesome. And this was before they brought in like the trucks or they nerfed some stuff. So it was really, really good. Space Marine 2, well, Warhammer 40K Space Marine 2 makes the list. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I haven't finished it, but it was really good, old energy feeling game. It had like the feeling of Gears of War and this big chonky dude, but it wasn't hampered by the same slowness that Gears feels. It was kind of how I imagined 40K. Simple as that. Just made it great. And then finally, Like a Dragon, Infinite Wealth. Now, this didn't make my top five, mostly because I haven't finished it. I know it's a long game. But for what I did, I got up until a point where I had to go, like, do a scavenger hunt in a shopping center. And I was like, and I got distracted and sort of wandered off. But Ichiban as a character, big fan. Him and his little crew, loved it. Loved the silliness, loved the seriousness. I love all, like, the deeper RPG elements of it. Big fan of Yakuza Like a Dragon, Infinite Wealth. Yakuza Like a Dragon's a different game, but Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, really, really good. All right, Game of the Year, Max, number five, go.
Ooh, number five, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Number five. Wow.
Yeah, it was a real banger of a year for JRPG.
Mm.
And Final Fantasy VII slots in there for... it is... it's that middle child. It's the middle child of what we know to be three games. It is the game where they slightly give you a little bit more exploration the first, but not quite completely go wherever you want to go. Graphically stunning. It did have some hitches on graphical mode. I didn't have a problem playing performance mode the entire time. I always do. Story-wise, was fairly faithful to what it was. There was a few... sections that were retold, and from memory, because I played it back in, I think it came out in February, March as well. I enjoyed the rewrites. I liked how they finished it. A lot of people didn't. Fine. I look forward to seeing how they finish it off. But it's just, unfortunately, there were many more games that I personally enjoyed more than it this year.
Wow.
Which is crazy, because I love me some Final Fantasy.
Mm. Interesting. Well, for me, my number five is a game you already highlighted, and already highlighted as part of my... where did I put it? I put it in my best indies. Plucky Squire. Everything I highlighted earlier. This game's great.
Fair enough.
Really cool. Your number four?
Number four is Yakuza Like a Dragon, Infinite Wealth. I think this is the game that I spent almost the most time with this year.
Mm.
It was my first adventure into the Yakuza... be quiet. It was my first...
Back to the desk companion, little Hadley.
It was my first foray into a Yakuza game. They did a fantastic job all throughout the story telling me exactly who these characters are.
Yeah, even though we're like eight games deep, like they really explained who they were. It was awesome.
The relationships they had with the protagonist, why I like them, why they are, how they are at this point in time. Absolutely fantastic job of onboarding a brand new player. I adored the game. It had all the fun up JRPG mechanics that I loved. It played like a Persona game to a degree. It had that silliness, but also knew when to take itself seriously. And it had very deep emotional moments that were absolutely fantastic and paid off so well.
It was like a silliness, not at the expense of the characters. Like everyone felt like respected, you know what I mean, as a character. Like there were some that were a bit sillier, but like they were still given moments of character development and growth to be like, yeah, they're silly, but this is why you should care for them.
Yeah. Absolutely fantastic game. And would at halfway through the year, this was my game of the year.
Excellent. So my number four was your most disappointing game of the year, Silent Hill 2. So I had always grown up as a Silent Hill kid. I became a Resident Evil guy with 2 remake, or 7, then 2 remake, and then 3, and then a 9. Instantly sold. So going back and playing Silent Hill 2 was a lot of fun, because I remember playing it when I was in PS2. I think I played it like once or twice. I spent more time playing 1, 3, and 4, weirdly. I never actually owned 2. So be able to go it and see it now, and in a way that's how I remember it, because I was an idiot and I was a kid, where here it's like, it's pretty, it's lovely, it's vibrant. Like the sound design was immaculate. The lighting was a bit shit. It did go a little bit long. Like that last third of the game felt like more than, you know, 2/3 of the game somehow. I really loved it. The way it tackled very serious issues and very serious character points, and with it kind of being this big allegory for grief and loss, and how to channel that, and how to work within it, and it's just processing. Really loved that a lot. I thought Silent Hill 2 was absolutely exceptional. Big, big fan. Number three, Max.
Dragon's Dogma 2.
Ooh, I forgot you played this one.
Oh, Dragon's Dogma 2 is awesome. It is that beautiful high fantasy game that I love. It's those, you go out, you hunt those mythical creatures, you climb on them, you take them down a different way each time depending on how your party's built. It had the craziest ending I've ever experienced in a game, where it rolled credits for me and then went, but you're not done. And I had this whole epic 30-hour content after the credits had rolled that I needed to play through to cleanse the world that I had lived in for so long, and that I had been trying to save and course correct all the bad things that had happened. And they're like, didn't matter in the end. The calamity happened, and now you have to deal with this. And I think what won it for me most was the gameplay and the combat of, you know, having those epic mythological creatures roaming the world, and you can see them coming, and you're like, how am I going to deal with this one? And you can use the world and its the things in it to your advantage. Like, you know, if you're being chased by a giant troll, you can run across a bridge, because if that troll steps on the bridge breaks, and then you have to wait in-game weeks for the people to rebuild the bridge. Ooh. That's just out of commission from now on. You have to find another way across. And everything that you did in the game had a consequence or a benefit. And it was so brilliantly done. Had a blast.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. My number three, which is probably surprising for many, was Alone in the Dark. So I played this earlier in the year. I think it was earlier in the year. Midway through the year, I don't remember, because it kind of just came in and then went away. Oh, it was earlier in the year, because it was meant to be around October last year. prior to me being a Resident Evil kid, prior to me being a Silent Hill kid, I was an Alone in the Dark kid. I played a lot of Alone in the Dark, A New Nightmare on PS1 and PS2. When they announced this, I was like, sick. I get to be Edward Carnby again. Let's go. Except this time I was played by David Harbour. So that was okay. But like this felt like an old late PS2, early PS3 experience. The story was kind of batshit and weird. The gameplay was relatively simple. There was a lot of that Metroidvania backtracking. So you'd go find a key and you'd work out what the hell you do with that key. Very Resident Evil, and you know, you're looking through your map trying to find which doors have I gone through, which doors have I haven't. And then it did that kind of Silent Hill crossing between two planes, like, you know, the normal world and the weird world. I really dug it. It is absolutely a AA game, and I loved it for all of those things.
Yeah.
You want number two?
Metaphor ReFantazio comes in at number two. It is by far the best designed JRPG I've played this year. It has the most compelling story of a JRPG I have played in many years. It hit that perfect balance of grounded enough that it had some, like, the world felt real, but was still supernatural enough that it made sense that creatures existed in this world. Again, you know, as a Persona fan, this was an easy pickup for me. It plays exactly like a Persona game, but again, it has that more, because it tells a more mature, to a degree, grounded story. It doesn't feel so... It doesn't have those moments of ick where you're playing as a high schooler doing high schooler random BS, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So it was nice to, you know, and it makes some real-world comparisons between, you know, the struggles between keeping religion and state separate and... what happens when those don't get separated? How...
And racism.
Oh, horrendous racism. I like so much racism. But yeah, that's what happens when you segregate people into tribes. Funny that.
Well, my number two, I've already discussed, was Balatro. So, all the Balatro praise. Now, is your number one and my number one the same?
My number one's currently being played next to me.
Yeah, mine too. Okay, cool. Number one's Astrobot. Duh.
Yeah, number one's Astrobot.
I'll let you, because I could probably wax lyrical about Astrobot all day, so I'll let you go first.
So Astrobot won not because it pushed gaming in a new direction or it did anything crazy innovative that hasn't never been done before. Astrobot's the game of the year because I got to spend my entire playthrough playing it with my kid.
Yeah.
So much like a couple of years ago when I played It Takes Two with my wife, and that won my game of the year because of the experience I had with it. This wins, Astrobot wins this year because of the experience I had with it. My kid's currently sitting beside me now playing Astrobot.
Yeah.
She just deleted her save file. She had 306 bots, and she's like, I want to start again. She loves it. She's absolutely adored it. Just watching her get better and better every time she plays it, tackling those speedrun levels over and over and over again to beat the birds. Watching her go from, Dad, I need help to do this boss, to, Dad, look at this, I can do this by myself now, has just been a pleasure to watch and experience. And she's... It's been such a great... gateway drug for her into the gaming space. So much so now her it's funny, every time she asks to play a new game, and if I decide that she's not old enough, her go-to age is like, so when I'm 10 I can play it, right? So she's looking for what's next, which is awesome. But it, the game is so whimsical and well-designed, and it hits that nostalgia every time you find one of the branded bots as opposed to just the random, you know, normal Astrobot bots. It's just such a good game. It really is. It's so well-designed. The level design's fantastic. It's linear enough to the point where you know where you're going, but it has just enough exploration where they can hide all the things, all the collectibles and stuff. So it's not super easy. You know, some levels you have to do multiple times. They've put into place their bird mechanic of once you beat the level, you can have the helper bird come through and be like, hey, you've missed something over here. Go check it out. It's just such a fun game. It really is.
Yeah, look, I completely agree. There's a reason it's my number one. And a lot of that is my own sentimentality in that it's the game that I experienced with my son. I was very lucky, you know, that he happened to be here at my house because he lives with his mum. You know, he was lucky. We were able to have him here when the code came through. So we were able to play it together, like, from scratch. And being able to see his joy, the joy in his face of as he's opened up to this new world. And it's a world that we get to share. Not just because we played it together, but because of the connection between old and new in its throwback to these old games. So when we would collect these branded bots, he'd be like, who's that? And I get to tell him. And he gets excited. And then he gets to go, you know, play in these like main character worlds, whether it be Horizon or Uncharted or God of War or Loco Roco or Ape Escape. You know, so we get to then discuss that as well. And, you know, he knows how much like God of War means to me. So he became more interested in God of War, able to understand it differently by playing here, which then inspired him to go play Ragnarok. And watching him try to beat the game, get all the bots, you know, get all the puzzle pieces. Like, that was fun. I loved it. But the impact of this game, as you mentioned, like, it's not revolutionary. It is a throwback to an older style platformer, but in a new world space, with great sound design, great like visuals, the feedback you receive from the controller takes full advantage of the DualSense and all its haptic feedback and the adaptive triggers. It's all those things. Like, a game here doesn't have to be revolutionary in terms of new mechanics or new ways of doing things. It can just be about what it makes you feel. Because that's why we play games. That's why we fell in love with games. And that was because of the joy at which it gives us and the happiness that it fills us with and the ability to share that with those that mean the most. So there is no question that this would be the game of the year. And so much so that my son's birthday was recently, he turned 8. He had an Astrobot and Cuphead themed birthday party. Like, his cake was Astrobot. The plates were Astrobot. The cups were Astrobot. You know, he got himself, like, I got him, like, we got him shirts and like a plushie. And like, Astrobot is, this is going to be his Mario. So in X amount of years from now, when, you know, he's old enough and maybe even has his own little ones, he'll be able to retell the story of he and I playing it together and how powerful that was for him and how that led him into a path of becoming a more of a gamer and a wider gamer in terms of the games which he chooses to play. Like, that game is a core memory for my son now. It's a core memory for me, the what we got to experience together. And I remember, like, experiencing the God of War world for the first time, and I welled up. And then when I'm seeing all these little, you know, bots from like all these games from my youth, I'm like, oh my God, I remember that. And then you go into the gacha crane experience and you're like, oh my God, like, that's brilliant. They just add to it. No doubt.
Yeah, the biggest problem of obviously experiencing it with Hadley was the fact that I could have placed higher in the world record platinum trophy.
Yeah.
Because I waited to play new content with Hadley, and because of that, I only got 23rd.
Yeah, and I got like 36.
Could have been way higher.
There you go. That, so that is our personal game of the year. It's not really a surprise, being a PlayStation show, that we would probably incline that way, but it is genuinely such a remarkable experience. That anyone that shits on it, you didn't earn game of the year, fuck off. The game was brilliant. How you choose to have the criteria for selecting your personal game of the year, but for us, it's exactly that.
Right.
All right. Well, that does bring us to the end of this and also the end of 2024. So big thank you to everyone for listening to us over the last 12 months. It's been an absolute pleasure. We will continue to do this into the new year because we're mental and we'll just do it even if no one's listening. But we're very lucky to have people that do. Yeah. So there might be some minor changes, maybe a change in day. The episodes might go up on a Tuesday now instead of a Monday, as both Max and I get busier on the weekends as our kids get older. So, yeah. And, of course, big thank you to Max, as always. It's always fun to do this show, but it's even better to do it with you, because doing it by myself wouldn't be as good, let me tell you. All these JRPGs I'd have to play, gross.
Oh, no, right. No, it's always good fun. You know, I've been doing this for, three and a bit years now?
Like that now? Yeah.
It feels like only yesterday.
It is crazy.
It's one of the things I look forward to each week. It's good fun.
Well, for the last time in 2024, let's get out of here.
You know the drill, everybody. This PlayStation conversation happens at a time, at a place yet to be decided. It comes out every morning, or it comes out that morning at 8 a.m. on podcast services, 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. But again, if you'd like to take part in a future conversation with us, you can. Come check out our socials. Hit us up. Facebook, Discord, Instagram, and X. I take a while to reply. Don't feel bad. I'm bad at it. I'll get there eventually. But all the links are in the description below.
If you want to join us as the conversation happens, head over to twitch.tv/thepopculture. We watch us record this show live. We can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can. Tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation pod. If you want to support us, Facebook. No, wait, that's right. Fuck. If you're listening on podcast service, give us a 5-star rating and a written review. Watching on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, leave a comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. And if you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/popcultures, as well as our merchandise store, popculture.com shop, where you can buy shirts and other sort of shit without logos on it. But until next year, I'm Ryan Betson.
I'm Max Cooper.
And that was For the Players. Merry Christmas, everyone. Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas, all. Be happy, be safe.
Yeah.
Don't do anything crazy.
Or do whatever you want. See you in 2025. Yeah.